Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
With the advent of computers, a great deal of research that was previously performed using animals can now be done with machines. But computers are not living organisms, and the best computer model cannot always predict what will happen in real life. The Foundation of Biomedical Research is the oldest and largest organization in the United States devoted to promoting public understanding, respect, and support for the humane and responsible use of animal research. Mr. Paul McKillops, the Vice President of the Foundation of Biomedical Research, will discuss the ways that animals have made an irreplaceable impact on life-saving advances in human and veterinary medicine. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Want to know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Doc. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude. Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.FidoFriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Ready to take a walk? Not just you, but your whole family. It's the 2008 Whisker Walk, Sunday, June 8th from 9 to 4 at the Lancaster Fairground in Lancaster, Massachusetts. Pet owners and animal lovers walk to lend a paw to benefit the animal shelters and pet charities they love. Come see exhibits, demonstrations, educational programs, special attractions, product giveaways, entertainment, auctions, raffles, food, fun, and things for adults and kids to see, do, and buy, both human and pet-related. Whisker Walk 2008, a fun day for everyone. For more information, log on to whiskerwalk.org.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Mr. McKillop, thank you so much for being with us today. Could you tell us, first of all, a little bit about your background and how you came to be the Vice President for the Foundation of Biomedical Research?
Well, Bernadine, it's a pleasure to be with you, and it's a pleasure to join you and your listeners for this broadcast. I've been a veteran of the motion picture and television business for 20-plus years, and last year I had the good fortune of serving in Iraq as a war correspondent for the State Department, and one of the things that I was able to do was travel with military veterinarians all across the country of Iraq as they worked with Iraqi veterinarians to restore large animal veterinary practices as well as small animals. So I got great baptism by fire in Iraq as they were working to rebuild that industry. And when I came back to the States last summer, in the summer of 2007, I had an opportunity to join the Foundation for Biomedical Research in Washington, D.C., and hit the ground running.
Well, it seems interesting. Here's a person with all this media background getting into an area. You're into conflict, I see. So you're in Iraq with conflict, and now you're in a foundation that I'm sure is always having to work with conflict. Those people, many, I think, who have the best of intentions, but who feel that these animal rights, animal activists, that all research using animals should be stopped. Why is this not a possibility? Why is it not feasible?
Well, you know, there is so much misinformation. Bernadine, when I don't have a medical background, and I've got pets of my own, but I certainly just made the assumption that that the folks that are doing the medical research on breast cancer, on Alzheimer's, on ALS, I made the assumption, obviously, they have to do some research on animal models before they can take those procedures and therapies to clinical trials to try them on humans. I always assumed that had to happen, and I assumed that it had to happen responsibly and humanely. What I never understood is that there was a rising, increasing movement that was against using animals in fundamental research. And so I must admit, I came to this industry a little bit blindly and didn't realize that it was so much of an issue for some people. And what I was able to conclude just in my first few months of working for the foundation is that there's misinformation. The general public just doesn't understand, in many cases, what the biomedical researchers, veterinarians, medical researchers, what they're doing with animals. And unfortunately, the horrible cases that we sometimes hear about are exclusionary. They're not the rule. They are the exception to the rule. We've all heard about horrible cases where an animal was abused in some form or fashion of research, and that's just not commonplace. So unfortunately, the American public and the European public have jumped to some conclusions that are simply erroneous.
What I found very interesting, and I get in my email box every day a email offering from the foundation called Total Eclipse, and I am just fascinated on a daily basis of some of the research and advances that have been allowed because of work that's being done with animals. Could you highlight some of these?
You know, Total Eclipse is one of our publications that we put out because Bernadine, this is so important for your listeners to know. We have entered the golden age of research. I would say the 20th century was the golden age for the physical sciences, learning about distance and travel and putting a man on the moon and back and all forms of transportation and navigation over the seas and over the roads. The 21st century is the golden age of medical research. We are seeing breakthroughs take place on a daily basis that boggle the mind. And now all over the world, because of the advent of the Internet, where we're broadcasting right now, we're getting this information at lightning speed. The information superhighway is bringing these discoveries and sharing it across the platform of researchers, veterinarians, medical doctors, graduate students at lightning speeds, so that a discovery in New York can be applied in Rio de Janeiro within minutes because information is taking place. So as we enter this golden age, we're finding on a daily basis that, unlike the old days, we can build upon each other's research. What we find out with research on one particular rodent at the Jonas Salk Institute in Southern California can be applied to rodent research at the University of Minnesota that afternoon. And that is one of the phenomenal aspects of how biomedical research is evolving right now. And the beautiful part about that is because one of the things that I found is that all researchers, veterinarians, doctors, graduate students, they love their animals. I mean, these rodents, mice, rats are being petted, nurtured, and cared for in a capacity that is beyond what I ever imagined was taking place. And the more that we're able to share this information, the less and less we need to use as many animal models as we have in years gone by. So the breakthroughs that are taking place are just astonishing.
So it really sounds as though there is a lock and key of using animals for many of these procedures that have to have a living model, but you can also at the same time be using the information and then converting it into computer models. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely. You know, once we've made a discovery in a mouse, we don't have to reinvent that wheel. We don't have to rediscover the same thing. So we build on that platform. And so when we use a mouse model again, we're looking for something completely different. And so what that, you know, the net effect of that is less and less mice at the end of the day are going to need to be used, because now we've got that computer profile that can be used, those alternate methods of research. Now, will the day come when we no longer need animal models? I hope so, and I hope the day comes when we no longer need doctors treating cancer patients. That's what we're all shooting for. That's the direction that we're all going in. But until then, we have to see what happens when we use a stem cell in regenerating a spinal cord injury. We need to see how that develops and helps in a rodent. We need to see how different treatments or drugs or conditions will improve for any variety of diseases or conditions. So the animal model, it is so important to what the researchers around the world are doing right now. And, you know, one of the things that I didn't understand, Bernadine, is that all of the animal research is mandated by the federal government. It is for our protection that so many of our therapies and our research have to be proven in animal life systems before they can be applied to the human life system. And what that's given birth to is the new buzzword around the world, and I'm sure you've probably discussed it on your show, and that is translational research, translational medicine. Just like if we were to take a word in Spanish and translate it to English, it's what is the meaning from one language to another? What's the meaning of a discovery of a new technique for replacing a knee or knee cartilage? What we've just learned in the human model, can we translate and turn around and apply in a golden retriever? That translational thing is having huge impact right now.
What I love, and it was looking at, was the total eclipse from back in February 25th. They were talking about a dog, and you're talking about translating things back and forth. And what I find so wonderful is here is a dog who has a Labrador retriever who has a heart defect that is causing the heart to beat too quickly. And if it continued beating too quickly, this dog was going to die. So it was a veterinarian together with a pediatric cardiologist who have perfected a way of inserting a device into this pet that will then have radio frequency ablation, basically killing some tissue that's overstimulating the heart. And here is this translation of medicine from what we've learned in humans and what we're learning in animals to help the animal. So it's not always the animal being experimented on. They were doing the research with and for that animal.
Well, you know, that's absolutely correct. This is not a one-way street where the animals are only helping the humans. I was at the University of Missouri a couple of weeks ago watching a 18-month-old yellow lab who had blown out her ACL in her knee from playing too much aggressive frisbee. And there, a senior veterinarian for the university and graduate students watched as this senior veterinarian performed an ACL replacement surgery on this yellow lab. This isn't a surgery that was from the canine world. This is a surgery that was perfected for college football athletes. And it has an application, a translational application, that's applied for a small pet. So one of the things that all of us need to understand is that medicine has become a two-way street. What we learn on the human side has animal applications. What we're learning on the animal side has human applications. This is for the benefit and for the health advancement of all of us.
I do so enjoy the changes that I'm now able to perform with my own clients, with their pets, of things that have been learned from the human side. And one of the biggest things is realizing the pain that pets will experience and the new medications that have come out. Oftentimes these medications were first tried to go into the human market, and they're going, no, this is not going to work on the human, but it's something that works on the animal. You were talking about doing the cruciate repair on a dog. In the past, when people had to have cruciate repairs, they would have these huge incisions being made on their bodies. The same thing was holding true for the dog. And now being able to use endoscopy, which was first perfected in the human, now I'm able to have that being used in my patients. I just find it fascinating. I love it because reading Total Eclipse, I figure there's also hope for me as I'm getting older. They're talking about a fatal brain cancer that's being tamed by gene therapy. Some of these marvelous advances that are going on, and some of the not so marvelous ones, but still ones that kind of tickle my fancy, they're talking about an anti-aging substance that's been found in bullfrogs. It's like, how this is helping people. Amazing.
It is. And as I alluded to before, this is the golden age. This is the Michelangelos and the Da Vincis of our modern era have the opportunity to make a difference. And not just, this is not just for affluent America. This is third world Africa. The opportunities for the application of translational medicine is all over the world. I was at the University of Minnesota last week where they were researching a synthetic heart valve that they put in a young lamb that had a heart condition. So they're testing that because they can turn around and take this synthetic heart valve and put it on the shelf in any third world country so that someone who has a devastating condition doesn't have to wait for a pig valve or something like that to be flown in. They've got a synthetic opportunity because it's been researched and proven. The impact for all of us is a greater quality of life. And all of us I refer to, from the smallest canine and feline to the oldest human, whether, as you indicate, it's aging or if it's the elimination of type 2 diabetes to Alzheimer's. I mean, that's the path that our youngest and our brightest and our seasoned are pursuing. And animals are playing such an enormous role. And it's amazing how that the discoveries are taking place at such a rapid pace.
How is the Foundation for Biomedical Research making sure that the research that is being done is humane? Because that is such the big concern. These animal activists are, I think, scaring many people into thinking that the research that's being done, these animals are being injured, these animals are being used unnecessarily.
You know, it is such a subjective question and a subjective issue. Let me give you an example. At Oregon Health Sciences University up in the Portland, Oregon area, an animal rights activist got hired by the University Research Center, went undercover with an agenda, and photographed primates, monkeys, being very, very upset, and then released that video to show that this university was poorly taking care of their animals. Well, what had happened is this particular person put a bowl of food outside the cage for the primates to get them all stirred up and created video, of course, that shows them quite agitated. You know, there are so many things we can do. If our agenda is to slant something to create distrust, if our agenda is to bring down research, there's not really a magic pill that this foundation or any of us with some common sense and decency can come up with that's going to combat that kind of thinking. And so from the foundation's perspective, what we're really trying to do is to communicate with your listeners and with the general public around the country to let them understand that the major universities of the United States, the major research centers, we are all federally mandated the process and the procedures by which we need to care for our animals, to treat them, to feed them, to house them, to provide them medical care, to make sure that there's no pain and suffering. These are federal mandates. And in addition to that, every university that uses animal models in research is subject to surprise unannounced visits from inspectors. So the safeguards are in place. The vast majority of research centers, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, do more than they're required to make sure the animals are taken care of. Yes, there are exceptions. Yes, there are incidents that need to be improved. I don't know about you, but I make mistakes as well at my house. And I do things that I can do better in the future. So I'm not suggesting that every example of animal research is done perfectly, but I am suggesting that the vast majority is done very humanely and very responsibly.
We've been talking right now with Paul McKellips of the Foundation for Biomedical Research, educating us as to why animals are necessary for use in advancing human as well as animal medicine. When we come back after this few messages, we'll be talking about animal survivors and educating our children about the need for animals being used in science. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Thinking about buying a monkey? How about a ferret or a skunk? Then check out the show that will answer the burning questions: where do you get them? What do you feed them? How do you take care of them? And most of all, what were you thinking? With exotic pet expert and author Bob Tarte, every week on demand from PetLifeRadio.com.
What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Paul, thank you so much for being with us. You've been explaining why it is so necessary for animals to be used in research and how they're being used humanely. And yes, there are likely some that aren't being as humanely treated as maybe we would like. And you're right, everyone's going to be an individual. I think what a lot of people aren't aware of is that when animals are under stress, that their whole metabolism, their whole body reacts very differently. And if people are trying, researchers are trying to have repeatable data, those animals have to be in as stress-free an environment as possible.
That is so true, so important. I couldn't agree more, absolutely.
One of the aspects of the Foundation for Biomedical Research is a section, if you want to call it, about animal survivors. Could you tell us a little bit about animal survivors?
Well, one of the things we focused on as we've gone out and talked to the American public is much more comfortable with animal research that saves and improves the lives of animals than they are with animal research that saves and improves the lives of humans. And quite frankly, I've been shocked as I sit in focus groups and listen to mothers in their 30s and 40s telling me that animal research that improves one of their children's health conditions, they wouldn't support as much as animal research that improves the lives of their pet. And quite frankly, it was in that shocking discovery that I said, you know, one of the things that we need to do to help educate the public, to help them understand the efficacy and importance of animal research, is to, in fact, show them how animal research is being used in the among animal species to improve their health. And so Survivors talks about what's being done in equine medicine, what's being done with the small pets, what's being done in agriculture to improve the lives of animal agriculture. And so one of the things we're focusing on is the example that I mentioned from University of Missouri with the Yellow Lab, as well as University of Minnesota and heart valve replacement. What we're finding in this whole concept, again, of translational research is the different improvements that we're discovering among the animal kingdom has immediate impact and benefit to the animal species themselves. And what we're ultimately going to see is a greater, stronger, more fit, more healthy animal kingdom than perhaps we've ever seen in the history of our existence. So it's not only the golden age for medical health advancement for humans, but also for animals.
Several weeks ago, I interviewed a veterinarian, Dr. David Waters, and he is with the Gerald P. Murphy Oncology, Comparative Oncology Group, and that's in, I believe, Indianapolis area. But what was fascinating is that he was saying that oftentimes as we're working with rodents, which are very necessary for research, but being able to use an animal that spontaneously has a problem, for instance, they were looking at Rottweilers who were having cancer, and this type of bone cancer was very similar to the type of bone cancer that young human males would get. So the treatment that they were able to formulate and try to understand why this cancer was forming in dogs, that same information was then able to be used to help humans. So yes, I agree with you that people oftentimes are much more willing to have some type of experimental treatment done on a pet if they know it's going to be helping that particular animal species. Talking a little bit about rodents, on one of the web pages that you have is the importance of being a mouse. And it is an entertaining kind of educational series for children. What is this importance of being a mouse?
Well, one of the, this is a publication that we had done probably 2 or 3 years ago to help young children understand that in addition to the mouse that all young children are familiar with the Walt Disney Company, the mouse animal life system provides a great model for human medical research. And the importance of the mouse is that we have learned so much. We have learned so much in Alzheimer's therapies, in cancer therapies, in diabetes, in addictions, in so many varieties, spinal cord injuries, for example, the Christopher Reeve Foundation using mice and rats to bring back muscle function after a traumatic spinal cord injury. So this publication is one of our campaigns to help young children understand that mice are playing such an important role in our discoveries. We have a new cartoon series for television and for radio called In the Line of Duty. And this particular program takes a look at the Global City Police Department and their crack team of investigators, Detective Knockouts, which is for the knockout mice, Detective Rats, Detective Moley, and several others who go out into the community to try to solve these massive crimes against humanity, which are the diseases and conditions that afflict people all around the world. And so what we want to do is to have children, young people, our future researchers and our future citizens, to understand the importance of animals, to hold them in incredibly high regard, and realize that many of the keys to unlock the mysteries are going to come through the animal kingdom.
And it's a great way for the parents who maybe also had some concerns of animal research to be educated at the same time that their child is being educated. If people wanted to learn more about the Foundation for Biomedical Research, where can they go? What can they do to help?
Well, one of the things we'd love to have you do is come visit our website at www.fbresearch.org. Again, that's www.fbresearch.org. And then the other thing is we want you to encourage your local elementary school and middle schools and high schools to start bringing in curriculum and subject matter and class topics so that the other side of the story starts to be told. Our children are exposed to the animal rights position early on, and so they understand what the opposition is saying, and many of their charges go unrefuted. But every animal rights protester and every child has a vaccination mark on their upper left arm or right arm that is there to prevent serious life-threatening diseases which have been brought to us by animals who provided the fundamental research that give us the health we have to protest if we want or learn and expand and conquer some of these dreadful conditions.
So there really is a difference between animal rights and animal welfare, because these animals being used in a humane fashion really are assisting the welfare of animals and assisting the welfare of people. We've been listening today to Paul McKellop of the Foundation of Biomedical Research explaining the utmost importance of having animals used humanely to help advance our medical knowledge. Thank you so much, Paul, for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much, and I appreciate your listeners giving us the time, and I wish everybody great health in this coming year.
You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com. Tune in next week for some more interesting, stimulating conversation. Have a great day.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.